Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Amy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
It's Footy Prime Podcast, a bonus edition for you this Thursday. I'm James Sharman. Jimmy Brennan's here. Craig Forrest. Amy Walsh is here. Dan Wong, JC is here. How's it going, everyone? You good?
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear it. A special guest today, a friend of the show. He's probably been on actually more than any other guest, actually, I think. And it's very fitting given what's happened the last number of days. It's been a good few days, I think, for Canadian football, which you don't get to say too often these days. CONCACAF president, FIFA vice president, Victor Montaliani. Vic, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Oh, thank you. Great to be back and looking forward to that coveted pen I get maybe as the most, you know.
It's a mug, actually.
Yeah. Is it a mug? Okay, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, let's get right into it. My first question is probably the most important one, Vic. How did Gianni Infantino convince you that he was going to wear that safari outfit on Sunday and not you?
Yeah, I was a little shocked in the morning, I have to be honest, when we said, let's go casual. I go, tie? No tie. I kind of went smart casual, and he wanted to do that, and all the best. I think he's brave. I think he's a brave man. So, I'll leave it at that. Let's put it that
way. I think if he pulled the hood up, he'd look like a Care Bear.
Yeah. No, listen, you know what? He's never lacked courage, Johnny, for many, many things, including a lot of good things. So, you know, but, hey, you know what? People wear what they want to wear. So,
I couldn't imagine Sepp Blatter wearing that. So that's a good thing, right? Johnny's
That's true.
Progressive.
Yeah.
All right. So Canada gets 13 matches for the 2026 World Cup, same as Mexico. Vic, was that always the ideal number for Canada? Was there much going back and forth with the committees?
You know, it was, first we were at 10 with the 80 games. And then obviously once we went to 104, we were in the mix for more. You know, the reality is with two venues, you can only play so many games on the pitch anyway, right? You got to look at pitch management, right? You can't play every day on the pitch. You have to give it a minimum time of rest, right? So that the grass can, you know, come back. It was always an agreement that the quarterfinals on would be in the U.S., so that was clear. So the best we were ever going to hope for was a round of 16 in our country, and we got that. So I think we maxed out on what we could get, you know, when you put all those factors into play.
They're going to put natural grass in the BC plays, obviously, and the pressure on that, is there guarantees that pitch will survive? And what are they going to do when they're not playing on it? Like, is there going to, how are they going to work that? And will it get enough light? And
Yeah. So the technology for the grass going into 2026, and actually we've used it in other World Cups as well, even in 2018. It's not so when you see a one game where, you know, somebody's playing a two European clubs in the summer, that technology is usually a pallet technology. They come in, they put the pallets together, you know, Man City plays, you know, Celtic, and away you go. Those pallets are gone, but that grass stacks is dead. It's not alive. That grass will only last 3 days, 4 days. This is live grass. So the grass we're going to put into every stadium, pretty much, not just BC Place, every NFL stadium, is going to be live grass as if it was installed from day one. So the field gets raised, irrigation, lighting, air. That grass is live as if it was Wembley. So no issues at all. The technology is so good that you can grow that kind of grass in an indoor stadium. Now, all of our stadiums are indoor, but they all can open up. So that'll help. And then you got hydroponics, you got all this technology. So I have absolutely no doubt that the pitches will be top.
Well, coming from British Columbia, you definitely know about hydro.
No, yes, that's true. Yeah, we definitely know about hydro and hydroponics as well.
Yeah. wasn't it Detroit in '94 the first time that they actually used pellets?
Pallets,
and they were octagon shaped, weren't they?
Yeah. And we used it. You know, it's used all the time. And you know, even the pallet technology has come a long way. I remember a game here. I don't know if some of you remember that when Man City came, when that Balotelli was on the team, and it was at Empire, and they brought it in the pallet. It was a disaster because it rained. The field was shocking, and because it's dead,
yeah.
So there's no water that comes through, right? So it's come a long way, and you know, obviously we'll be in good shape when we get to 26 because most of those installations will happen. We'll start late 25, early 26. So you're going to have a good runway of growing it, right? And then getting their roots and all that stuff.
Jimmy, how the hell did you know that?
What's that?
That 94 was when it was first, that technology was first used.
In the Pontiac Silverdome.
That's something. Right, yeah, that was amazing that Jimmy knew that. That's why I'm really impressed. Well done, Jimmy. All right, so the buzz begins now. It's exciting. Obviously, 2 and a bit years to go. I mean, are you confident that Copper Can is going to step up now? Because we've been waiting for a while to see that evidenced, and we haven't quite seen it just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I can comfortably say that all of us on this call are, you know, veterans of Canadian soccer and have the scars maybe. But, you know, we've also had some good years as well. Let's not forget that. And a lot of good people. And I think we sometimes forget that. I think, you know, there has been a corporate community that has stepped up and we have to thank them, the current sponsors and all that stuff. But I think if you take corporate Canada as a whole, I think your comment is right, James. I think, you know, I said this in Toronto, our sport has never been the sport of institutions, right? Unlike other countries. We've been the sport of really immigrants. And it's been an immigrant sport, and we've had to scrap and claw for everything we got. You know, we are not the sport on Parliament Hill or in the legislature and on Bay Street or House Street. We just haven't been that. That's starting to change. I mean, the CEO of CIBC is a footballer that played in the National League for Toronto Metro Croatia. I've never heard of that in my life before in Canada. So you're starting to see the change of that. And I hope that the lead up to this World Cup in 26 will put some fuel into that. And so that I think it could be the tipping point of our sport becoming now the sport within the hallways that it needs to become.
I hope that it is, because not only from a corporate standpoint, but from everything that surrounds the sport. You were president back when Canada hosted the Women's World Cup in 2015, right? And so from your own experience and learnings at the time, because I believe that we missed the boat on capitalizing on the momentum from that tournament, which was really well received. It was seen as a resounding success. So what have you learned, like, now that you're sort of away from Canada soccer and in your roles at the Confederation with FIFA, what can Canada do differently this time around in order to ride that wave of momentum and maybe shift that perception a little bit about the sport?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think 2015, we were a little early in the ball game as it relates to the women's game. We were really the first World Cup that really sold tickets, transcended the gender, right? The Women's World Cup to 2015 was only the Women's World Cup. It was not the World Cup, right? But 2015 was the first one. We broke ticket sales. You saw people walking around, whether they were male or female, wearing jerseys of players. It was the first one. And because we were the first one, I think we were not, as the not just Canadian soccer, but as a sport, able to really take advantage of that. And I'll give you an example. When we bid for the 2015 Women's World Cup, we were the only bidder. Okay? The only bidder. I think Zimbabwe bid, but, you know, with all due respect to Zimbabwe, they pulled out, but they didn't have a bid. They had a piece of paper saying we wanted to host it. They didn't actually put a bid together. After the world saw what we did in 2015, to your point, Amy, in 2019, you had 8 bidders for the 2019 that went to France. 2023, you had 6 bidders that went to Australia. Now there's a, you know, not only 3 bidders, but 3 co-hosts for the Women's World Cup in 27. Because now the football world, not just the corporate world, is going, hey, this is a great event. It's not just, you know, ticking the box here that we have a Women's World Cup. It's now 2015, and this is what I'm most proud of, showed the world what we did in Canada, that, you know, there's viability, sustainability outside of on the pitch, outside the pitch as well. And so the reality is we weren't in a position to really do anything from a corporate standpoint. And to be honest, you know, the corporate world sometimes, they'll say a lot of great things publicly, but when you close the door and go ask them for money, not always there. You know, I know that's always been a challenge here in our country, both on the male and female side. But I think that's starting to change. With the work of a lot of people and a lot of stakeholders, whether it be the leagues or whether it be even Canada Soccer by hosting certain events and stuff like that. So I think now is a bigger opportunity to do that, to change the sort of vernacular of how we discuss these events.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Vic, I wanted to ask a question just specifically about you. You've been with CONCACAF now for 7 years. You've taken an organization that at one point was struggling. There was a lot of corruption going on behind the scenes to a $1 billion organization. Competition has been great in CONCACAF. Now more teams are playing more games than they've ever played. We've got a training facility now that's coming into the Dominican Republic. It seems that all countries are working together. You've brought a World Cup to North America. To date, what is your proudest accomplishment?
On a personal level?
On a personal level.
That I can still on a Friday morning walk in and play a five-a-side footy with my buddies. Actually, you know, all joking aside, that I still get to spend time with my mom and dad and you know, trying to balance that. But, you know, from a football perspective, I think, listen, you're right. We were financially bankrupt at CONCACAF, literally had no money. We were morally bankrupt. That's an obvious, just watch Netflix. And then from a football, we were really bankrupt. We had no women's programs, like zero.
Yeah.
We're about to embark on a women's Gold Cup in whatever, 10 days or whatever it is. We have a women's Nations League. We sent 6 teams to the Women's World Cup. Those teams didn't even play football when I became president. That went to the World Cup, right? On the men's side, as you guys know, it was like, trying to, you know, you played 3 games a year, right? Unless you were U.S. and Mexico, who played 40 in a 4-year period. Now everybody plays football. You see players coming from all over the world, knocking on countries' doors saying, hey, my grandfather used to, you know, lived in, you know, has a passport from St. Lucia or whatever. So there's been a big burgeon. And for me, let me tell you that one of the proudest moments I ever had as a CONCACAF president was the very first Nations League game. I went to Montserrat, the smallest country in the world. So I went there. I went to watch Montserrat Belize. Montserrat, in the previous 8 years, I think played 2 games. Okay, they had no real team. So now they have the Nations League. They got a whole kind of like portfolio of games coming up. They play their first home game, and it's in the most romantic stadium I've ever been in. romantic in a literature standpoint, Jimmy, not the other romance. Right?
Were you watching the game with Fabio?
No, I wasn't. So you come up on this bluff over on top of the Caribbean Seas below you. You know, it's obviously warm. You have a little grandstand, almost like Swangard, if you guys remember the Swangard, about 1500. And the pitch was like Wembley, man. It was unbelievable pitch, right? So Montserrat kicks off, plays Belize. Guy hits a screamer in the 85th minute. Left footer, Jimmy Brennan versus Austria, right in the corner, right? Brilliant strike. The prime minister of the country and the president of the federation turn around and are bawling their eyes out. You have 3,500 people in the stadium, which is 80% of the country. Right, 80% man. Of the country.
Wow.
And they were going crazy. And it was like, I'm like, wow. Like, it's one thing going to the World Cup and seeing Messi, whatever, but seeing the smallest country in the world and people crying because they won a football match, mate. It was like, I go, okay, you're making a difference, right? And then I got honorary Montserratian citizenship the next day before I went.
What does that get you?
Yeah. So anyway, maybe that's the proudest moment, because you get so involved in your day-to-day work, but you're going, wow, you know what? Football makes a difference in people's lives. It really does, right? And sometimes we forget that, quite frankly. We get so involved with, you know, ancillary issues. I think that was probably one of my most proudest moments.
Brilliant. You mentioned those well moments. Last night in Hamilton, Champions Cup, the rebranded cool. Champions Cup, it looked great. It looked great on TV, which maybe we'll get to in a little bit. But the energy looked fantastic. Now, I don't know how many Forge fans were there compared to Tigres fans. But regardless, we're seeing that domestic league, that confederation.
Guadalajara fans.
Chivas.
Yeah. Chivas. What did I say? Tigres? Oh, that's Tigres. Vancouver. Sorry. Yeah. That's Vancouver.
Tigres was in Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver.
That was a good game, by the way.
Nice. They were both good games.
Well, why
today's Thursday, Sharms.
Yeah, is it? Thanks. Appreciate that.
Jeez.
But my point being, though, I mean, the energy in the stadium looked fantastic. It shows how far that tournament's coming along as well.
You like the rebrand? You like the new anthem?
I didn't hear it, I'll be completely honest with you.
Oh, you got it, man. It's awesome. I'm not even into that stuff. So we got the producer of the Rolling Stones. And he actually is the guy that composed the new anthem for the Champions Cup. It's awesome.
So it's like the music that's playing when the teams walk out?
Yeah, yeah. Bum, bum, bum. It's awesome.
Keep going.
Is it better than UEFA?
I'm not even into that stuff, but I was like pumped. Like, I was walking around the house yesterday going, bum, bum, bum.
Vic, you're a natural. What are we talking about? You're a natural. Yeah.
So it's better than the Champions League in Europe's.
I like it better. It's totally modern, and it takes, because our big thing is epic battles, right? Because the hardest club championship to win in the world in terms of the most winners has been ours since 1962. Yeah. It's a hard trophy to win. Very hard. It's hard to qualify for, and it's very difficult to win. We rarely have a repeat champion. Rarely.
Well, it's harder now, right? More teams, there's more money at stake as well. What was the main reason for the rebrand? Clearly it's worked in the early going.
You know, a couple of things. Obviously, when I say Champions League, what do you think of?
Yeah, Europe.
Yeah.
Right? So you wanted some distinguished. We used to call it the Champions Cup, right? And to be honest with you, because we're a quadrilingual confederation, but mainly bilingual, Spanish and English, when you translate Champions Cup to Spanish, it sounds brilliant. Copa de Campeones.
Mm. Oh.
Copa de Campeones.
That does
right?
sound good.
Yeah.
It sounds good. Right?
I have a question about branding. Yeah. How come the women's gold cup is pink?
Is it actual pink?
Yep.
Yeah. Isn't that rose gold?
I thought it was not impressed. Rose
gold,
pink,
no?
Rose. Yeah. I mean, we're into semantics, Victor.
You know, I honestly don't know, but listen, send an email and saying, listen, change it.
I'll send a very tersely worded email.
I will send it to the branding department. So.
We were talking, we're just talking about the CONCACAF matches from last night, which were very, very well received and excellent matches. But there's been issues in Canada, obviously, and I know you're a big champion of Canada soccer. What insight do we get with all of a sudden last week we reported that One Soccer was closing? CPL and One Soccer were at each other's necks on going to court lawsuits. A week later, One Soccer has all of CONCACAF on, and people, what am I to make of this, or what can we make for this? Is there any insight that, because CONCACAF obviously has a contract with Media Pro and they're fulfilling that contract throughout this tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they've worked out, you know, their own issues. I mean, when they're ready to announce that, they'll announce it, I guess. But, you know, it's, you know, listen, I think, you know, whatever issues they have between themselves, I'm sure they'll resolve it. You know, for us, it was important to show the game in Canada. So that was done. And listen, you know, the media industry, and you guys know this as well as I do, or better than anybody, it's really changing, and there's a lot more adversarial positions taken by a lot of broadcasters with their properties. And I can tell you, it's happened even at CONCACAF, right? Now, it hasn't ever gone public, but, you know, things that you would have never heard of, a broadcaster taking that position 20 years ago, now they're a little bit more. There's so much competition. You know, there is not the money that there used to be for some of that stuff. You know, so maybe some of the characters out there, you know, thought something was worth X and now it's not worth X. And they're going, well, hold on here. How do we rejig this? It's happening all over the world, you know, and in some ways, to be honest with you, and maybe I'm a little different. When I saw that, I go, oh, we've arrived in Canada. We're actually having a fucking scrap. Oh, sorry. We're actually having a scrap between broadcasters and football. All right.
Well, it's because, interesting.
Because broadcasters never give a shit about our sports.
Right. And it's so, you know, Vic,
so
last
I
night.
I look at it in a different way.
Yes.
Those things always get resolved.
It's interesting because I was talking to Amy this morning and Craig this morning. God, we talk a lot, eh, guys? we're in each other's brains.
I've seen you again.
But we were talking about TSN and Sportsnet. Someone had made the comment that there was not one article about where the match could be found on either of those websites. And I said, guys, these are the opportunities for Footy Prime, for the partners of Footy Prime, for anyone who wants to get information, follow us. And all of these things are opportunity for our team, who are so well connected and having, and like, that's why we thank you so much for jumping on with us, because honestly, it's our relationships that keep us going. And
it's your sales pitch, right? Well,
no. Well, when we have a CONCACAF fueled and focused podcast, then we'll talk.
Listen, I've always been clear with all of you guys. Anytime you guys need anything, I mean, you got three people that have worn our jersey, and you have a legendary broadcast, and then you got you, buddy, that's in your bedroom there. Like, what's going on?
Stop it.
Didn't even make his bed.
Legendary producer, is what I like to say.
You know, make your bed warmer.
I'll always, you know what? I'll always be there for my Canadian family. Good, bad, or ugly, by the way.
Yeah.
You're on the set of the 70s show.
Yes. this is my mom's upstairs kitchen where, you know.
Yeah. Where you grew up.
I grew
it's
up.
It's great. We love it. All right, Victor. So back to the Canadian soccer situation right now. The general secretary, we thought we had a general secretary, didn't work out for whatever reason. I'm assuming, you know, that the search is going on right now. Is it alluring the right kind of people, do you think? I mean, is it a good sell, that job in Canadian soccer right now?
Yeah, you know, I always like to take a step back. And I guess because of where I am, you know, I haven't been at Canadian soccer. I left in 2017. As president, and obviously went on to this, you know, I know that it's sometimes hard for us to think, oh my God, you know, these labor issues and whatever else. The reality is that compared to where we were pre-2012, we're in a lot better place as a nation and a football nation. We had nothing, man, zero. I know people even talk about things. Oh, we didn't. Well, from a business perspective, we had zero. And you know, after you know, we've started a league, obviously, We've obviously our national teams have done well on the field. Our players are going on to greener pastures, both on the men's and the women's side. You know, I hope that this women's league is around the corner, right? And you know, I've talked to Diana a few times, and she's got my unconditional support, and she knows that. And so, you know, I think we're in a position a lot better than we were. And so maybe we're not a Ferrari, but we're definitely a BMW from a footballing perspective. Whereas, you know, 10, 12, 10 plus years ago, even more than that, you know, we were not even a Fiat. And so we have a hell of an opportunity to do some great things. I think we need to, I think it requires leadership on all fronts, not just at the CSA. It requires leadership everywhere. We need to stop, we need to solve our problems as a family, not outside the family. You know, some of your peers in the media don't really care about our sport. They just care about the tweets and the likes and thing. I want to talk to some of those people if they were the last person on earth. Because I love this sport so much. I'm here because I know you love the sport. All right. And so I think we need to take a different attitude, get in the room, solve the issues. And they're not easy conversations. I don't know what all the issues are, but solve them and get on with it, because I think we're in a position to grow the game on the men's side, on the women's side, and obviously as an industry in itself. The reason why we created the Canadian Premier League, whenever it was created five, six years ago, wasn't about just the men's players. It was one to forge the ground to hopefully have a women's. And I know that some of our cities have knocked on the door of the NWSL and stuff, which would have been great back then. I don't know now if it makes economic sense or not. That's up to them. Obviously, you know, now there's people that want to do a women's league, which is great. We need to support that. But it's also to create an industry. Coaches, administrators, media people, right? Keep going. It's to create our own industry. So why are we scrapping with each other? Like, you know, if you're a player and after you play, you want to work in the business, I would hope, right? So be cognizant of that. It's not about today. It's about tomorrow, right? And everybody's got to think about that. Players, administrators, leaders. So get in the room and figure that out. Right. And I think that's been the problem, that everybody's been shouting at clouds and shouting at each other a little bit rather than getting in the room and saying, hey, hold on. We wear the same jersey. Let's not forget that. We wear the same jersey, and it's time to get in the room and talk about it. And there's issues, of course. Like any federation in the world, there's issues. You know, there's 211 countries. You think we're unique because we're Canada? We're not. But like anybody else, we just got to figure it out.
So does world football know this, Victor? Sorry, Dubs. Does world football know this? Are they aware that there's a position available at Canada with all this potential?
And I think so. I think, you know, there's people that are aware. Obviously, we're hosting the World Cup, so a little bit more of a spotlight. I think they're aware that, A, there's a general secretary position open, and there's a men's head coach position possibly open because, you know, Mauro has an interim tag, but... You know, so there's that too as well, right? Obviously, Bev just got re-upped, so, you know, she's there for another, 3 or 4 years. I can't remember what the re-up was.
You're 27.
Is it 27? Okay. And so, you know, great. She's done a great job, and, you know, and she's got a very busy summer, right, starting with the W Gold Cup and then the Olympics. So, you know, obviously a lot to do there. I just think it's time that, you know, people start, to me, it's always, and I keep saying this, but it's, and people think it's just like a saying, but it really, when you say football first, it really means that when something comes onto your desk, you got to think what's important here, right? Is it important? Is this the right decision for the game? It might not be the right decision, by the way, for the federation. It might not be the right decision for the players. It might not be the right decision for me, but is it the right decision for the game? If it's the right decision from the game, that's how you make it. And to me, if you do that, you'll actually probably by the end of, you know, your career or your end of your term, you've probably made more right decisions than wrong decisions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You were talking before about building an industry,
yeah,
and talking about franchises and markets that were interested in joining the NWSL, and now Project Date is around the corner. No, you're right. There were absolutely bids made and kind of almost got it over the line. But I think now we're at the point where we have to nourish that ecosystem. It has to be Canadian led and then for the development of Canadians. And then sort of spring or jumping off of that, like from your perspective in CONCACAF now and talking about the women's game, how, I know that you don't have a say really in how federations treat their women's teams, but what is the biggest challenge for you as a confederation wanting your teams to do well? We saw Jamaica perform really well, make it to the round of 16 at the Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, but it was in spite of conditions that the Jamaican Football Federation was putting them in. From your standpoint as president of CONCACAF, what's your biggest challenge in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, we have a W strategy. And so at a confederation level, it's gone really well. Obviously, Karina was my first leader in that field, and she's gone on to Portland to great success there. And now, actually, and I'll give you an example. So when I hired Karina, she was the head of women's football. When she left, we actually expanded that and hired three women rather than one. So competitions, because now it's not just about women in isolation. It's about football and women that play football, right? And so we've had that tipping point at CONCACAF, right? With respect to my federations, we help everywhere we can. I mean, we were helping Jamaica where we could, with Haiti, who needs a tremendous amount of help. You know, a lot of that, though, Amy, whether we like it or not, is cultural, societal. Conversations are different when you go into certain countries when you talk about women's football. And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just telling you what it is. And so we need to chip away at that and make them understand, hey, listen, this is, and I think the real carrot is the football carrot. If you say this is about football, because they speak that language, right? It's always been spoken in one context, which is the men's game in that particular country. But if you can get them on the hook about the football and showing them how, you know, listen, there's some countries, I personally think their women's team can be top 10 in the world and their men's team will never be top 10 in the world. And so you got to show them that could actually massively help A, your country, and B, actually could help your men's team too, by the way, right? So you have to have strategies to say, if you just go in and say, listen, you know, this is wrong, then they're just going to tune you out. So I think it's having those right conversations, understanding each reality of each federation, and really supporting as much as you can them, and obviously helping people within the women's game in that country. So, you know, and I think we've had some successes there. Panama's one, for instance. They didn't even have a women's program. You know, Central America was always about Costa Rica. Watch out for Guatemala, by the way. Mm. They're coming. Yes. Yeah. Right. And I think Honduras is a sleeping giant there. Great athletes. But again, it's changing that dynamic, right? And with Jamaica, I agree with you. You know, they could be a top eight country in the world. I mean, they arguably have the best player in CONCACAF. Mm-hmm. I think Bunny's, you know, if I said Bunny Shaw is the best player in CONCACAF, I would take that argument any day of the week. She's a fantastic player.
Should have told the voters for FIFA best awards.
Right. Wow. Don't even get me going on
no,
that.
No, I know I won't.
I remember 2012 going crazy when our number 12 should have been best player in the world then. She was just at a different level. And, you know, I can't remember who won it in 2012, but I'm like, you know, so, but that's a different, we can do a podcast on that one alone. But you're right. I think this is where I think, you know, the growth of the game is in our confederation and quite honestly, globally. Because these issues happen in other confederations, in even in Europe, in certain parts of Europe, Africa, South America, Asia, right? But, you know, I was really impressed. Actually, I was in Saudi, and I went to a Saudi League game, Women's League. Wow. Wow.
Were there any women allowed to watch the Women's Saudi League?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
There's been a big change there. Now, I'm not making a statement about what, how, what. But I was pleasantly surprised of the I'll give you an example. The federation itself, 35% of the employees, women. That's more than Western European federations. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a – let's put it this way. I think they're trying. Whether – you know, I know some people will say, well, I don't think that comment's sincere. From what I can see, they're sincere about it. Now, I'm not going to comment on laws and all that kind of stuff. That's not our job as footballers and football people is to stay in our lane with football. Like, you know, too much of the world thinks we're going to solve everybody's problems. Like I'm not going to do that, right? No, you're not going to do that. But if we can move the needle with our sport, then we need to do that.
Vic, with this massive growth we've seen in the women's game and the competition and the World Cups every 4 years getting better and better, what does Canada do to stay in the top 10? Because the competition is getting great and some of these leagues around the world and countries are taking it serious. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Spain really didn't give a shit about it. And now all of a sudden, they're the world champions and playing incredible football. How do we maintain that? How do we stay up with our quality to be continually to challenge for trophies?
You know, the good thing is, listen, you know, one of the best kept secrets in Canada is League One, right? Mm-hmm. League One Ontario. I don't know what the one in Quebec's called. It's League One Quebec. But
League
I think,
One Quebec now, yeah.
Is it called League One?
PLSQ, and now it's League One Quebec.
That's what I remember it as. I'm old, though. So now you have League One British Columbia, right? And it's a great league. And there's a lot of players that come out of that league that move on. In fact, it's probably top five leagues in CONCACAF, okay, from a women's perspective. And so that's a great base for us to go to the next level. So we need to continue doing that with a league like League One, bringing our players through the youth system into sort of those professional environments and standards, and then obviously to the next level. And then our top players, no different than the men's side, need to go to, you know, let's be honest, they need to go to the top teams, whether it be in Europe or in WSL. And so if you can keep doing that and having a strategy where your youth players, for instance, are playing here in League One and obviously the next tier, when hopefully we can lay that on top of that. And then our better players have that international exposure to playing with big international clubs. I think that system would bode itself very well. I think it's better, to be honest with you, and I understand that, you know, I'm not saying you don't go get an education, but the NCAA system is, you know, both for the girls and the boys side, it's okay. It doesn't produce international top players. But maybe there's a way to work with that, right? So, because I think the CPL figured that out with some jurisdiction with university, with the youth sport thing. So I think we could do that on the women's side as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously, because not every player is going to be Jesse Fleming, and we know that. But maybe you have a professional career, but also you have that education in your back pocket as well. So I think if you could sit down and strategize and lay that foundation and lay that pyramid, I think it would serve us well for the next whatever World Cups. Because with all due respect to, you know, Sophie and Christine and now Jesse, Well, I got to listen. There's a Christine playing somewhere here right now. She's probably 6-7 years old. They're there. We have them. But we have to water them, you know, fertilize it, nurture it, and then let it go. Right? But they're there. I honestly believe that.
Is traditional broadcast, is that part of the solution here? Or is that ship sailed? As landscape changes so much with broadcast, we're seeing with the Apple deal and MLS, for example.
Yeah.
Globally, everything's changing so much. I mean, fast forward 5 years. I know you've been pretty critical of mainstream broadcast media in Canada for a while and their lack of support for Canadian football, any kind of soccer, quite frankly. Is the future lying beyond those borders?
It's interesting because a lot of the major sports now are making some noise about getting into the business and going themselves linear, you know, creating media companies as leagues, for instance. There's a lot of that noise in the market. You know, it's that balance, right? You want that exposure you get on, you know, your whatever cable package for your properties, right? So that you can go to your sponsors, like, oh, you know, we're there. But in the same token, you know, a lot of these linear channels or digital channels have come in with a bit of cash, and it's hard to, if you're a property, to say no to that, right? So it's creating that balance, right? You know, the reality of the Canadian media market is, you know, it's not a massive market to start with, right? Compared to our, you know, sisters and brothers in the South. So it might make that decision a little easier if you're a league in terms of the digital versus the traditional way. So I think, you know, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I think there's parallel paths here, which one ultimately wins. And now you're seeing broadcasters hedge their bets too, because they all have digital platforms, right? Whether it's Peacock or Tubi or whatever, right? So they're going, okay, all right, we better, you know, get in the game, but which way are we going? I mean, I heard an unbelievable number for the Chiefs and the Bills divisional playoff on Peacock, like with 32 million or something. And they charge in the U.S. So if you wanted to watch that game, you have to pay whatever it was, I don't know, $9.99 or whatever. That's a lot of money for one game, right? Yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, depending, I guess, what your product is and what you want. So it's an interesting time, let's say the least.
You're muted, Craig.
Stacks, you're muted.
Oh, you should have let him keep going.
Fuck off, Jimmy.
Good question.
I was just waiting. I want the whole thing to go.
I'm so glad you asked that for us.
Yeah, really good.
Now I forgot what I was going to say. No, I was going to say, Copa America is coming to the United States. Talking about the media standpoint, how does the rights work for that? Who produces it? Does CONMEBOL have anything to do with that side of things with this upcoming Copa America in the U.S.?
Did you get it?
Well played. Well played.
Loud and clear.
No, listen. So Copa America is played in the U.S. this summer. It's a joint venture done by CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. They wanted to play, you know, I said, okay, let's, you know, we've been talking about a few years about it. So in essence, six of our teams will compete in the 16-team tournament, all 10 of theirs. We are doing the back shop, I guess, of the tournament. Like, and that's, it's really, it's like a Gold Cup, but it's just called Copa America. So we're the ones running the stadiums, the ticketing, all that stuff. So we're doing all the back shop. CONMEBOL obviously will do the, you know, the they'll make decisions because it's their tournament. But a lot of the broadcasting was already sold before we even entered into an agreement. So all their media rights are sold. A lot of their sponsorship was sold. So that was already baked in. And then obviously they handle the protocol, you know, like, you know, who gives a trophy away. And obviously it's their trophy. So it'll be the president of CONMEBOL. So, but it's a joint venture. And for us, it's great, both obviously on the commercial side for us, but also on the football side, because six of our countries are going to get a great experience 2 years before the World Cup. And let's hope that, you know, from a Canadian perspective, obviously, they're hoping that they do well against Trinidad. But it's in front of them, right?
Yeah, Victor. I guess you got to be careful there, right, Victor? Next March, you got to be careful what you're saying.
Listen, Trinidad's a great story. It's been a normalization community for 4 years. They got hit the most out of the corruption, and they've done a great job. And listen, you know what? They have every opportunity to beat Canada. I think they can go toe to toe. They got some good players. Maybe not as household as they were before with the Dwight Yorks of the world, but I think Trinidad's come a long way. And I think they're going to come out of normalization soon. And I think Trinidad will be a force to reckon with in this confederation for the next sort of cycle here.
Victor, we see we've seen in the past World Cups that have been in Brazil, been in South America. The infrastructure really didn't support everything that they've built. They've got these stadiums that have been left behind. And we've seen over the past World Cups in North America have been successful. International friendlies continue to come to North America because they are successful selling out these stadiums. Stadiums are in place. Infrastructure is here. Do you see one day that maybe North America will be will host World Cups for the future rather than it gets spread around the world?
It's an interesting question, because I think it's something I think FIFA needs to look at because there's some realities now. I think Qatar will likely be the last World Cup hosted by one country, just because you want to spread the wealth. It's an easier ask to your government for certain things if you don't have the whole thing. And also, I think from a nation building standpoint and being a good neighbor, it's great. You know, you go to your neighbor and say, hey, let's share in this, right? And you're seeing it with the Women's World Cup, right? Germany, Belgium, and Holland are co-host or want to co-host it. You know, Germany held the Women's World Cup, right, in 2011, right? Yeah, 2011. No problem, right? They have the infrastructure. But the point is, I think, you know, together with your neighbor, it's a much more pleasant experience probably, right? And it builds those diplomatic relationships. You know, from an event management strategy standpoint, I think it's important maybe FIFA, and I've said this before, looks at perhaps ensuring that, you know, out of 5 World Cups over 20 years, that there's a balance between going to developing nations to develop the sport, but also ensuring that it's in areas where you have some, you know, certainty of the market, right? Because at the end of the day, the World Cup is about making money. We're not a charity, all right? Because what do we do with the money? We give it to all the countries. You know, 75, 80% of the money at FIFA goes back to the member associations, 211. Out of the 211 members, I would say easy 60%, if not more, would have no money, no budget for football in their country if it wasn't for FIFA. Because there is no media, there is no sponsors, there is no, you know, there's no way to generate significant money to propel the sport in that country. So there's a significant amount of countries that without FIFA money, there's no football. Zero. In an organized way. And so, you know, it's imperative that we make money, because it just goes back to the 211 members.
Well, Victor, 45 minutes in, there's always many more questions. Any more on the panel you want to get to here before we say farewell? Or shall we let Victor back to his cooking?
Do you think it's too late? Is it too late for us, Vic, to make our national team for 26?
Well, I don't know, buddy. I think, I think if we go on a probiotics, maybe we sign up for one of these weight loss things. we might have a chance, mate.
I want to know more about your five-a-side game. What's your bread and butter?
Futsal. And so we play five-a-side. It's like a futsal, right?
Okay.
And it's with a lot of, you know, most of the players are guys that have played, you know, back in the day, NASL, national team, and then some of our friends too. And it's great because we go there and it's an hour. The first few minutes is, you know, laughs and giggles. And then as soon as the goal goes in, it's like, hey, can you cup there, man? What are you doing? Right? And then it really gets going. And then after that, we head next door and we have a coffee and catch up. and talk all things football 99% of the time. And so it's great. It's a great little – and if you're ever in Vancouver, you're invited to come play.
I thought you were going to say after 20 minutes you're breathing out your ass.
No. You know, listen, even in a 20 area, you know how to pace yourself.
Speak for
no
yourself.
Tracking, baby. There's no tracking.
Yeah. Hey, Vic, thanks so much for this, mate. Really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. We'll get you on again. Obviously, so much happening right now. Despite the backdrop of negativity in many regards, there's obviously also a lot of hope as well, and exciting times next 2.5 years or so, whatever it is.
Yeah, there is. And listen, I think in the end, we can't forget that we all, like I said, we all wear the same jersey. We may have differences of opinions, but we all wear the same jersey. And that's the most important thing when we all walk on the pitch together. Whatever that pitch is, whether it's a real football pitch or it's a boardroom or whatever, we can never forget that.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed Take care. This.
Thanks, Vic.
Cheers, thanks, guys. Victor.
Thank you.
That is Victor Montaliani, CONCACAF president, FIFA vice president. Interesting stuff. Dubs, do you get all the questions in?
I reserve some. Them?
I thought you were going to get to a 2027 question at some point, for sure.
I almost blurted it out.
Wait a second.
But there's three bids of multiple countries.
Yeah. Did he say something like that we didn't know?
No.
Oh.
No. It's still Brazil, U.S. and Mexico, three bids and of then multiple Belgium. Countries
for each bid?
Yeah.
But I think Sharms, you're lagging now. I think there's something going on with your internet.
Netherlands?
Netherlands, Belgium, Germany are the joint European bid. Yeah. Still no host.
All right. Well, that was enjoyable, though. Still no
host. It was.
It's on its way, though. But it does. Oh, I am lagging, aren't I?
Significantly.
Yeah, okay. How about Dubs? How about you take over the hosting chops here and say farewell till tomorrow, because I'm way off.
You just did. Farewell to tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed the bonus episode. Cheers for listening.
Fair.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV and by Tony Beck. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG.
Great one, good. Guys. Charms.
That's a clap.
Can you do the write-up? I've got to jump over to this guy who's in my house still.
Pick it, bud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.